Before we take more telephone calls, though, we start hour number three by having a conversation with the national NBA writer for the Los Angeles Times. He is a dad rock aficionado. Good friend of the program. He is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, good to have you back. Dan, how are you and what has spring been like without the NBA playoffs for you?
It's been a lot of time at home with we're lucky to have a very young son, so that's been good. It's been good time with I know B. Arthur has appreciated having me around, my dog, Jim, not the actual actress B. Arthur.
Right.
Just kind of sitting around doing some reading, and then trying to like track down as much of this NBA stuff as it's kind of slowly trickled out over the course of 3 months. And then earlier this week, it was sort of the floodgates of it all, and we got to finally see what the plan is.
Dan, speaking of reading, some light reading, the league unveiled its plan to return to play in Orlando, and they dropped nearly 150 pages worth of documents on policies and procedures for that return. You have a piece in the LA Times breaking it all down. What was your overall reaction upon reading that document?
It's very thorough, and it's as thorough, I think, as I think that was sort of the idea, right, is that this is obviously a scary time in terms of the pandemic still. Cases are on the rise in Florida, in the county where the NBA is going to be. And I think it was incumbent on the league, and they've said from the beginning that this was going to be a important thing to them. Like, I mean, that player health and safety was number one. And obviously there's so many financial considerations to this, but they needed to kind of, I think, put some people at ease and say, look, this is how thorough we're going to be. I mean, like, you know, at times it was pretty easy to mock, and some of it was pretty comical. Like, you know, when you have the recipe in there to, this is how you disinfect a basketball, you know, or you learn that, you know, decks of cards are going to be single use only, but don't worry, there'll be plenty of them. Like, you know, we've got the bicycle people on speed dial. We'll be able to get you as many decks of cards as you need. I think it just kind of speaks to just the level of sort of detail that they've already gone through. And I think the thing that makes me most confident is that I think the NBA has shown a tremendous amount of adaptability. And I think the policies those 150 pages are, you know, certainly going to be adjusted as more information becomes available. And it's in the documents that's certainly the case, that these are the policies for day one. And after that, we'll see what happens.
We're talking to Dan Wojcicki. So, Dan, what's your sense as to how the players will respond to some of the restrictions, especially those related to wearing a smart band and guests?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are kind of the, especially for people who are entering free agency, like that's the type of stuff that's a little like big brothery, where you don't want, you know, certain medical data shared, certainly not like blood work and stuff like that, as teams and their sports science departments have gotten smarter and smarter about certain things like that. That, you know, I think there's a healthy fear. And it's probably warranted that teams would use that stuff against players in negotiations. You know, that, you know, Montrezl Harrell, your blood oxygen levels aren't as high as, you know, as someone I would want. And that means that as you get older, your effort levels are going to decrease, and so we're not going to offer you a 4-year contract. Stuff like that, Jim, right? So I do think that ultimately, like, the people that go to Orlando for this are going to be making sacrifices, and that might just be one of them, right? Is that, like, this is something we're going to do. Like, I don't really want to wear a Magic band. I don't want the NBA, even though they say they don't know exactly where I'm at all times, like, you know, it's plausible. Like, you might just have to kind of put some of those worries in the back of your mind and say, like, look, we're here because we want to get paid. We're here because we think it's important to finish the season. These are just kind of the costs of doing business right now at a time like this.
Dan Wojcicki writes for the Los Angeles Times. He joins us once again. Dan, I think my favorite detail of the entire document was that anonymous hotline that is available for reporting violations of procedures. I love the possibility of guys narking each other out, ratting each other out. Makes me laugh, but in reality, do you think that'll actually happen, or will guys not really be monitoring each other like that?
I don't get the sense that people are going to be monitoring it like that intently. Just because, like, as a general rule, when you deal with, you know, athletes and at their athletic primes, it's like, you know, there is a certain level of invincibility that comes with this. And so, you know, it'd be like, I don't imagine James Harden picking up the phone and saying, you know, I watched the Orlando Magic playing cards and they were sitting 4 feet apart instead of 6 feet apart. Like, I don't imagine that, right? Like, I think now if there was egregious stuff and you know, and it was stuff that made people feel unsafe, I think that's a possibility. But I don't know. I like to imagine that, I like to imagine sort of the possibilities of it as sort of a competitive advantage, right?
Where, yes.
Like the night before a game, you know what I mean? Maybe before the NBA Finals, you have LeBron calling on Giannis and saying, well, you know, I just saw three women walk into Giannis's room. I don't think they're supposed to be there. You should go check this out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or you order him some Postmates or something like that he's some illicit Postmates. Like, I think the possibilities like that are kind of funny. But for the most part, I think, look, right, like this is going to be an honor system thing. Like, just like a lot of this is in society, it's sort of, you know, I think maybe one area where you can see people is like sort of the bedrocks of their plan, Jim, are be outside, be apart, and wear a mask, right? Like, those are sort of the general things. And I think if you saw people, like, egregiously disregarding some of those things, maybe somebody would pick up the phone and call. But I think it would come from a team official first, right? Like, it wouldn't be another player. It doesn't seem like that's in anybody's interest. Unless they can get Chris Paul a free throw, then maybe it'll happen.
I was going to say, yeah, maybe you don't see James Harden doing it, but I can see Chris Paul doing it. And I hate to say it, Dan, I think that you're right, but I'm going to hope that they make use of that anonymous hotline. Because then, to your point, if somebody uses that to gain a competitive advantage, we don't have to worry about them hanging an asterisk on that win. You can just put a giant rat next to that instead of an asterisk, which I think would be pretty cool. Now, on a much more serious note, Dan, alongside the discussion of protocols is the discussion for certain players about whether or not to play at all and whether or not playing would be a distraction from the moment at hand. What's been your reaction to how that conversation has played out?
You know, I used the word healthy before. I think it's been a healthy conversation because I do think those players are right. Like, this will, at least in some fashion, distract. There is such a tremendous appetite for sports. I don't know, Jim, if you saw like the golf ratings from this weekend, right?
Yes.
We're like through the roof. You know, I saw like 89% above last year. And that's, I mean, that's for golf, right? And I think, you know, for the NBA, particularly the NBA playoffs, in a year like this, there's going to be tremendous interest. I think they're expecting very big TV numbers. You know, on one hand, yeah, that's an opportunity to use a platform and to, whether it's a jersey patch or PSAs or whatever it is that the NBA decides to do. But, you know, like, that, the NBA's done stuff like that before, and maybe it hasn't been enough. So it's going to be a very personal decision. I can say this, in conversations with players that I've had over the past couple of weeks, like, in terms of the guys who don't want to go, if you could split that up kind of into a pie chart, the biggest slice is people who are concerned about, you know, detracting from sort of the movement right now against, you know, social injustices, racism, and police brutality. Like, they don't, people don't want to be a part. People want to be a part of that solution. They don't want to be a part of the problem. I think the second biggest sort of thing is what we've talked about in terms of just the overall level of, like, restriction. You know, that's the second biggest thing that people are worried about. And sort of, you know, contracting and dealing with the coronavirus is probably third, to be honest. That's probably the smallest of the three.
So, Dan, what about that? Like, for instance, well, they don't want you to call it a bubble. They want to refer to it as a campus. But how much movement in and out of the campus do you expect there to be?
For players?
Yes.
Almost none.
Yeah.
Almost none. You know, I think there were, obviously there are situations like, you know, inside the documents, they're going to build essentially sort of like, I hate to call it like a field hospital, but, you know, a facility that has X-ray and MRI machines. But, like, let's say you have to have some other sort of image testing or something like that done. Like, you might end up at a hospital. You might end up at, like, sort of a medical facility of some kind. You know, I think players, obviously, certainly if someone's ill or something like that, the NBA is offering provisions, like, if a player had a death in the family or even if they're, like, you know, someone's sister was getting married and because the schedule is shifted that, you know, there are circumstances in which you could get approval, but that approval is going to come with a cost, right? Like, you're gonna have to, when you come back, you're gonna have to do four more days of quarantine, you know. And then if you go out without permission, like, that goes to 10 days, you know. And I think, like, the thought process of just, like, going into a hotel room, and as someone who spends a lot of time in hotel rooms, like, sitting alone in a hotel room for 7 days, there's not a lot of, you can't really, like, spread your wings and fly in there, right, Jim? Like, there's only so much you can do.
Right.
And I think that to me would be a disincentivizer to, like, you know, a night out on the town, like, knowing that that's the cost, right? So there won't be very much movement. Now, I think what's kind of interesting is that there will be, you know, multiple tiers of people there, right? Like, so you'll have some media that'll be inside who will be very restricted, even more probably so than the players. Then I think, though, there will be kind of like, you know, as team owners come through, it'll be like they won't have any access, right? Like, they'll be out kind of walking around sort of with, like, the media that's outside of the bubble, not being tested daily. There'll be some in and out for those people, but none of those people are going to have direct contact with players. The media in the bubble is probably not going to have very much direct contact with players.
Dan Warkey is my guest. Dan, so before I let you go, let me ask you about a team or two. As an example, you can imagine mentally how challenging this would be. The Lakers have already been through an extremely mentally and emotionally exhausting season, both because of their time in China and then the death of Kobe Bryant. What's your sense of their mental toughness as a group right now?
Yeah, I mean, they've been probably tested the most out of anybody in the league this year in terms of just, like, dealing with chaos and having to adapt. And they've come through it pretty strong so far. But I'm a believer in limits, and especially emotional limits. Like, I've seen it throughout the years covering the Clippers and covering other teams where, you know, you can push and push and push a team, and then eventually it's just too much, and it just kind of falls apart. I'm not saying that that's going to happen to the Lakers in this situation. But, like, we are seeing, you know, you've got Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley who aren't sure exactly what they want to do. LeBron is obviously, you know, is laser-focused on a title and stuff like that. And I think, you know, they're going to be tested mentally. I have a story. It's online now. It'll be in the paper this weekend where, you know, I talked to one executive who thinks, like, the biggest thing there, even maybe outweighing talent, is just going to be, like, how tough are you mentally? And I do think that the Lakers have been tested that way. I will say this, Jim, during the course of the season, it was a very close team, a team that enjoyed being around each other, you know, and I think that's gonna really matter in Orlando, how much you like one another, because you're not going to be able to go home, you know what I mean, and see your friends or do any of that other stuff. Like, if you want to have some sort of, like, outside basketball activity, you're doing it with a teammate, so you better get along. And I think that does bode pretty well for the Lakers, but it is a team that has definitely been tested throughout the year a number of different ways. And, you know, kind of all of those seem sort of small potatoes compared to this.
Right. And then one final thought. What about the format? How does it relate, or what does it mean for the Clippers?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's a pretty favorable thing for the Clippers in general. I mean, they've got a lot of talent, which is going to matter. They have really good depth, which is going to matter. There aren't very many teams that could, like, conceivably say, like, if our second player were to go down with, you know, God forbid, coronavirus or something like that, and you lose that person for 10 days, like, what do we do? Well, like, the Clippers did that for most of the season without Paul George. You know what I mean? Like, they've shown the ability to win different kinds of ways, and I think that's very important in this situation. They have not been as close as the Lakers as a team throughout the year, so that'll be interesting to watch. But, you know, I think having it be an extended playoff format and having it be, like, not three-game series, not five-game series, just having it be normal, like, the Clippers were built for the playoffs all year. Like, that was the plan, right? That is why they dealt with the load management sort of backlash. It's why, you know, some of the guys that are used to playing kind of all out on a nightly basis didn't really react super well to that plan early in the year. Guys like Pat Beverly and stuff like that who are like, you know, 1,000 miles per hour always, like, having them kind of calm down and say, like, take the long view, like, that was hard for them. And I think that they kind of seemed to round into that as the season went on, Jim. And to me, having it be like a real playoff is going to matter. And the other thing, little sneakily, that'll matter for them is if they do play the Lakers in the playoffs, you know, we both know what Staples Center would have looked like for that series. And it wouldn't have been a lot of Clipper fans. And I think the ability to take that series and put it into, like, this sort of weird sanitized arena environment, devoid of a bunch of Laker fans. I think, like, I mean, that's certainly probably, it doesn't hurt the Clippers. I feel pretty strongly about that. It might even help them a little bit.
I agree with that statement. He is a national NBA writer for the Los Angeles Times. He is a good friend of the program. He is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, I appreciate you breaking that down. Always good to hear your voice on the show. Dan, thanks so much.
All right, Jim, be good. Happy smack off.
Thank you, bud. Appreciate it. Dan Wojcicki, he knows about the smack off. Excellent, excellent writer for the LA Times. National NBA writer.